one question that I'd like to get to, what I see as a major insight and a major advance that Ken has come up with in Overview and Superview is that the Wilbur Combs matrix is not just a way to describe that there are, you know, say 48 possible types of spiritual experiences. I think the huge insight is, look, this is actually a map. Every individual goes through this map. Any individual, we could plot their course through structure stages and state stages, and everybody's is going to look unique. And, of course, that provides us all kinds of information for how to help them, what the modalities are, what sort of spiritual technologies would be appropriate. So, Roger, I'm just very interested in your own story and how you navigated through that map. And as I understand it, you took your, what we call a right turn through states. You took it fairly late. I think you just catapulted through structures and through cognitive awareness. And at one point, something convinced you to take that right turn, and then you did that very deeply. So the two questions, one, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that in your own case. And the second thing is, what is your advice for integral folks now? Because there's this bewildering variety of traditions and technologies, and it's hard to know. A lot of them have left the tradition that they grew up in and haven't taken another one up seriously yet. So What's your advice for how to do that? And I know we've touched on that a little bit, but those are two things that I'd love you to comment on, Roger.
Well, there's an awful lot in there. The framework for the question was really, you know, what's come to be known as the Wilbur Combs lattice, the grid that emerges from mapping out 12 levels of development and four major states of consciousness. And then you ask about my own experience. Well, and you credit me with having jumped through lots of stages. Well, I would say I was intellectually precocious, but my wife would say I was emotionally retarded. So I think that a fairer way of saying that was that, you know, like all of us, I had uneven development, and I lived most of my life in my head. And by extreme good fortune, when I went into psychiatry, which I primarily did because of my interest in neuroscience, I found out I was doing psychotherapy on people, and I figured I really had this moral obligation to try it myself. I didn't really expect much would come of it. I was doing it on people, but I didn't have much faith in it, but I figured I kind of should try it. And I was very fortunate to go into therapy with a wonderful man, Jim Bugenthal, one of the founders of existentialist humanistic psychotherapy. And Jim taught me that there is an inner universe and vast and mysterious as the outer one. And it was literally perhaps the greatest shock of my life to find out that there was this literal inner world or universe which I had been totally out of touch with my entire life. And I felt as though I'd lived my entire life on the top 6 inches of a wave on top of an ocean I hadn't even known existed. So it really, really shook me up and was the great shock of my life. I would say the second one was when I got into meditative practices and realized just how unbelievably out of control our minds are. But once I realized there was this inner universe, then, of course, there was this compelling fascination with understanding it and trying to make sense of it, particularly since it seemed like the vast majority of the culture was like me and completely unaware of it. And it was like waking up to something and then realizing that I wasn't the only one. In fact, I was one of millions of people who was pretty much asleep around this, and what the hell was going on? So that led to an investigation of all sorts of therapeutic strategies. And living in California, of course, there was no shortage of things I could go through, and I did. And you name it, I pretty much did it. I might be embarrassed to confess to some of them, but I pretty did an awful lot of them, put it that way. And there was a lot of nonsense, but also some very powerful stuff. And then gradually I found myself gravitating towards spiritual practices, meditating, chanting, etc., which puzzled me enormously because at the time I thought religion was the opiate of the masses, and I was very much a hardcore scientist, actually more than a scientist, I was a scientismist. Science was more than my discipline, it was my religion. Yet as I began to investigate some of these practices, it became clear that they were powerful, and it really puzzled me. I could not understand why I seemed to be benefiting from practices that I thought were the relics of archaic ways of thinking and primitive cultures. And then there was literally one moment when I was walking from one room to another, and it suddenly hit me that the recognition that, contrary to my understanding, the great religions at their contemplative core, hidden behind the institutional and conventional forms, contained technologies for inducing and roadmaps for describing the states of consciousness that the founders had realized. And that was like a light bulb going off. It literally changed my understanding of the world. And so then I began to dive systematically into these practices. And the day after I got tenure at the University of California, I applied for 2-year leave of absence to go to Asia to do meditation practices. And then, as Ken described, kind of it was through going through those Eastern disciplines that I was eventually able to appreciate the very much hidden but still present profundity of the Western traditions and to understand some of those. So then in 1977, my beloved, who was subsequently to become my wife, Frances Vaughan, arrived for one of our earliest dates with a copy of a weirdly titled book, Spectrum of Consciousness. Instead of going out on our date, we spent the evening on the couch reading this book together. Talk about a wasted evening. So, but it changed our lives, both of our lives, and very shortly thereafter contacted Ken. I was going to my first long meditation retreat, and on the way back, I stopped off in Lincoln, Nebraska, which I think I'd barely heard of at the time. But there was this guy, and it was the beginning of a long friendship. At first, it was very intimidating because I realized I'm very attached to thinking of myself as a bright boy, but I realized I was with someone who was brighter, and that was a little threatening, but still a lot of fun. And so for a lot of years, I would stop off anytime I crossed the country in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then eventually Ken moved, and we've been fortunate to keep up a contact and friendship for now 30 years. A little while ago, Ken introduced me as his oldest friend, which I desperately want to imply means not as in most geriatric, but as in having to put up with each other longest. So so it's been 30 years, and it's been absolutely wonderful. And Ken, of course, has influenced my work and life and understanding and practices in extraordinary ways, as he has so many others. So it's been a wonderful journey, and actually a very good example, I think, of what we were talking about before, the importance of friendship and relationship and of people who stimulate and encourage one's growth, because there's clearly so much that I'm able to do now that I wouldn't have been able to do without Ken and the Integral community.